Good morning, Gavin Ellis.
Good morning, Catherine.
Where would you like to begin? A long list, as always, much happening.
We may not get through it.
No, but, where would you like to start?
Well, let me start with the Cartoon Archive. Now, the Cartoon Archive, of course, is run in conjunction with the Alexander Turnbull Library and the National Library. But the Archive's trust and guardians are being wound up after 27 years, and control of the Cartoon Archive is passing directly to the Alexander Turnbull Library, which is planning to expand it to include comics and graphic novels, which I think is a good move. The expansion is a good move, but the trust itself is an absolute credit to Ian Grant, who was its founder, and its mainstay, I think, over all of those years. This is an extraordinarily precious archive that goes right back to colonial times, and in fact chronicles some pretty dark periods of cartooning history, particularly in terms of depiction of Maori and so on, but important that we know those things. The archive has generated something like 16 exhibitions and 10 books, but the really important thing is that it's provided a safe home and safekeeping for thousands upon thousands of cartoons. And, of course, the cartoon that you see in today's newspaper will go into that archive as a matter of routine. So a credit to Ian Grant, and I take my head off. As a former trustee of the archive when I was at the Herald, I know how hard he's worked on it, and the legacy that he provides for future generations of New Zealanders, I think, is something we should all applaud him for.
It's an extraordinary historical resource. I actually became familiar with it former RNZer actually and writer Paul Diamond's book Savage to Suit was published last year, which was very much on the topic you were just talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
The portrayal of Māori throughout the newspaper history. Very interesting and very important social history.
Indeed.
So are you satisfied that the content and intent of this kind of work is has a future, I guess? Or
well, look, I know that newspaper cartoonists are becoming an increasingly rare commodity. I think that we have, per head of population, we've probably got more in New Zealand than many other countries. But I think that the need for it continues to exist. I described cartoonists the other day writing about one who just lost his job in America because he criticised Trump as the canaries in the coal mine of democracy. And they are our canaries. They are our early warning system, and they do it in a way that resonates. So they're incredibly important, and we've really got to protect them. But we also need to protect what they've done as well as what they will do in the future, I think.
The sharpest critiquing often, isn't it? But also, as you say, from an historical, from an archive perspective, they're a very important piece of source material as to attitudes and what was happening and what people were debating.
Yeah, and even things like the way people were depicted, you know, the way this dress and the social fabric that comes through in cartoons as well. The archive is rich on many, many levels, I think.
Mm. All right. Yeah. Now where to?
Well, first of all, let me preface what I'm going to say. The analysis of the Cricket World Cup final, I think, has been very, very good. I've been reading with great interest the likes of Dylan Cleaver in the Herald and Kevin Norgay and Mike Hessen in the Stuff newspapers. I think their analysis of what went on has been exceptionally good, and the breadth of coverage, I think, has been well worthwhile. But I take issue, Catherine, with what came before it. I think that the previewing of the game over the weekend was massive overkill. In our metropolitan newspapers, and this is Saturday and Sunday, we had 40 pages of previewing of the Cricket World Cup. Now, I think that was just too much. I don't know whether you read it all. I certainly didn't. I just I got to the point, particularly when I was looking through the nation's newspapers, of saying, OK, I just can't take any more of this. I give up. But it gave rise to a perhaps a broader issue for me, and that is, when is enough enough? Because I looked at other types of coverage during the weekend, and the stuff's your weekend magazine that runs in the Dawn Post and the Press, and I think the Waikato Times, I'm not sure, had 6 pages plus a cover on pub quizzes, for God's sake. Canvas had in the Herald had 4 pages, the cover, and a write-off that told me all I needed to know about the story about the Kakapo. In the same paper, Simon Wilson, whose work I admire greatly, asked 25 questions about Auckland Transport and devoted 3,000 words to it. What's wrong with 10 questions or 6 questions? And even Steve Brawnius, whose writing I really admire, I think he's one of our best newspaper writers, had a double-page spread on the marriage breakup of Kylie Bax. 4,000, I think it was about 4,000 words, maybe more than 4,000 words. And that's in spite of the fact that about 3 months ago, David Fisher in the same paper gave us chapter and verse on the subject, and I think he got about 2,000 words in which to do it. And really, do I need to know that much about Kylie Bax's marital problems? I don't think so. So, and it goes, I can go back further and further and further. And I think that it's time that our newspapers started to think not in terms of filling the available space, but what is the story and its picture content? And I'm all for running pictures in newspapers, but I think that they should be judged on their merit, not just on how much space they might fill up. And I think that it's time that there was a bit of an audit done by our newspapers, looking at just that balance between worth and breadth. And I hope that they do it. They probably won't, but it's worth bleating about anyway, I think.
Well, it's possible that. It's strange to talk about filling a gap, isn't it? But maybe it comes back to that age-old problem you've been discussing ad nauseum, which is, if you're going to have a lot of different content, you're going to probably have a lot of different journalists.
And yeah, well,
Not many people do anymore.
I did wonder about that, but there are more than one way of skinning the cat, but there you go. I think it's something that they should have a look at. Now, the other thing that took my interest during the week, Catherine, was it was a bit like Back to the Future. This was when Andrew Little, the Justice Minister, said that he'd been discussing with his officials the idea of a name suppression register. Now, this followed, of course, Google's flagrant abuse of the suppression order in relation to the Grace Mullane case, the murder case. And he said that he'd been looking at the idea of a central database, which he thought was well worth exploring, and the Media Freedom Committee and legal organisations came in and said, well, yes, it's an idea that's really worth exploring. There are issues with it, which I'll come back to in a minute. But the Back to the Future and the sense of deja vu was that this all happened in 2011 as well. You may remember the Law Commission did a report on revising the laws surrounding name suppression. And at the same time, the issue of a register was raised and was supported very strongly by the media through the Media Freedom Committee. And it looked as though under Simon Power, who was, I think, then Justice Minister, that it was going to go ahead. But it was brought to an abrupt halt by Judith Collins when she took over, I think, and the change of minister. And she knocked it on the head, saying that it was up to the media to get it right in the first place. So here we are again. Now, there are issues with it relating to some of the complexities of name suppression. Also, who should have access to it and how? Because, of course, if you had wide access to it, you negate the purpose of name suppression. So there are issues that need to be resolved, but I don't for one moment believe that they're insurmountable. And I think the idea of a register is a very good one, if for no other reason that our news media now, even though they might be localised in one sense, have national reach. And of course, our radio networks have had national reach for a very long time, but so do our newspapers' websites. So what happens at the court in Invercargill may appear on the Herald's website or the Stuff website, but do the people who are placing that story know about a suppression order that attaches to it? Well, a register would help them do that. So I think it is a very good idea. And there's also another potential benefit from it. If we have a register of name suppressions, it might be a bit of a pointer to how often our courts suppress names. And I'm not talking here about the suppression of the names of victims in sex offences and so on, which is a given and should be, but the discretionary name suppression of offenders. And I think that a register might be also a bit of a wake-up call to how often this is happening. I hope so, because personally I do think that it happens a little bit too much. But we'll see whether it comes to anything or whether it dies a death like it did in 2011.
Just a minute and a bit.
We shall see.
Yeah, a minute and a bit left. You don't have any bouquets today. Is there anything we can do quickly?
Well, no, I don't have a bouquet as such, but there was a really interesting story. I don't know whether you saw it yesterday, by Cass Mason on the Newsroom website, about a former police officer who said she was pushed out of the force after being approached to access information from the police database and refusing to do so. It was a very interesting story, but yet again we saw the privacy card being played by the police in this issue. And I'm getting a little tired of state agencies refusing to engage on what looks like an important issue on the basis of privacy surrounding employment or some other form of privacy, when in fact the person whose privacy is being protected has already gone public with it. It just seems to me to be a little catch-22.
There's plenty of politicians and, goodness, accused criminals themselves who would like their privacy. Unfortunately, public interest trumps it.
It does.
No pun intended. Thank you. Thanks very much, Gavin Ellis, media commentator.